a little girl. I lived in a house where sex was being sold in one room and drugs were being sold in another room. Sometimes we end up in exploitation just to be with somebody.
When he walked through that door, it was horrifying. Sitting there and just praying, don't pick me, don't pick me. And then he picks me, and I have to go into this room with him.
You're listening to CJSR 88.5. I'm Luke Sanders, your moving radio correspondent. Justin Kieber is the director, writer, and producer of the 8-part docuseries labeled. The series explores the commercial sex trade from an economical, emotional, and social standpoint. His episode, Missing, Murdered, and Forgotten, will be featured as part of the FAVA, or Film and Video Arts Society's 40th anniversary screening, which features talented local artists and members, including Justin. His documentary will screen out at the Capitol Theater in Fort Edmonton Park on March 15th. Welcome to Moving Radio, Justin.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so glad you could be a part of the Moving Radio family and just talk a little bit about the label. It's a unique project with a lot of layers. Could you explain to viewers what they might expect from the series and more specifically about Missing, Murdered, and Forgotten?
Yeah, so Labeled has been an absolute journey. It's been 4 years in the making. So we started December 2019, and that was with an email from Andrea Hines, who is kind of our main documentary subject we follow throughout the entire series. And basically what she said to us right from the get-go was, I was in the sex industry for 7 years. And during that time, I was traveling with this fluent doctor from Edmonton, and we were going to Las Vegas. And I was stopped at the border. I was fingerprinted. I was labeled a prostitute in the American database system, and I was given a ban from America. So now she's been out of the industry. She's totally against the industry, and she wants to fight the US government to get her ban lifted. And she's totally changed her life. She's got 3 kids. She's got a husband now, and they're getting to the age of wanting to go to Disneyland, but she's got that ban, right? So she can't take them there. So the series kind of follows that journey. But within that, we dive into deeper topics, and we interview buyers, current sex sellers, former sex sellers, politicians, the absolute works. It's been an amazing journey, an eye-opening journey, and it's something that definitely has changed my life. And hopefully when people can see it, it can open their eyes to everything going on as well. And I guess with one of those episodes, the one that's screening at FAVA Fest, labeled The Missing, Murdered, and Forgotten, that's our mid-episode, so it's chapter 5 in the series. And this one's kind of a special one to our entire team, but I think one of the most important episodes. And it's a journey into the lives of 3 Indigenous women who were abused and exploited and harmed during their time in Edmonton's sex industry. It discusses the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls epidemic, which, you know, there's 4,000 plus missing and murdered women all across Canada. So it ties everything in with racism and intergenerational trauma and just everything. It's absolutely eye-opening, and it's very difficult. It's a heavy episode. But I think it's important to have those kind of heavy conversations, and you can't have change without having those types of conversations. So we're grateful and honored for the chance to get to screen it for an audience.
It's really incredible, the staggering number of missing and murdered women. What would you say inspired you or motivated you specifically to tell this story about these 3 women?
It pretty much started with Andrea. So when we started doing interviews, it kind of one person started talking. And then they were like, oh, okay, we trust you guys. This is not what we expected when you think, you know, an interview camera coming to interview you and reporters and everything like that. It's not like that. It was pretty much just a team of 4 people. So one person kind of felt comfortable. They'd tell someone else, oh, you need to talk to this person. And sure enough, then we had like 80 plus interviews, which was pretty daunting. But through those interviews, there was Juanita, April Eve, and Kathy King who spoke. And we sat in the editing room and we're like, we have these 3 super important stories, and they all kind of tie together in certain ways to missing and murdered Indigenous women in Canada. Why don't we kind of step outside the Andrea narrative and make it just about this? And we're all like, yeah, that sounds good. But, you know, how do you do that when, you know, all 3 of us kind of producers are Caucasian? So we had a kind of a talk about that and what that meant for us. And ultimately, we came down to, we enlisted a few elders who came on board just right from the get-go and made sure we were doing things authentically and just making sure things were told honestly. And that was spectacular and grateful to have them on board.
It's incredible that you took those steps. Honestly, that is a tricky space to navigate. So good on you for taking the time to make sure that you got it right. Homelessness is quite visible and apparent here in Edmonton, along with many major cities across Canada. And buried in that is the complex and difficult space of the sex trade. Unfortunately, it's not something that's going away anytime soon. After spending a lot of time examining this issue, what do you believe are some of the solutions to maybe creating safety for these women or helping individuals get out of this space?
It's such a difficult topic. And for me, just kind of taking the approach of not really knowing anything and just diving in, there's a lot of layers to it. It's, you have a lot of folks on the streets and it's kind of what's called survival sex work. So a lot of it's just like, you need to sell sex to feed yourself, feed your kids. And we found that there's a lot of like addictions that we found in the street sex workers. So you kind of like add that on top of everything. And then there's also a sort of hierarchy within the sex trade where you have high paid escorts they're driving Mercedes, they're driving these really fancy cars. And then you have the body rub centers in Edmonton, which, you know, same thing. We have a buyer who's talking about like, you'd go to the parking lot and they'd be filled with all these expensive vehicles. And it would be the folks that are working in the centers. So there's this kind of dichotomy between the different aspects. So in order to, I guess, make safer spaces within body rub centers, the city has really attempted to make a safe space. Just, you know, they have bylaw officers that check in on the folks that are working. And then you have kind of the street exploited individuals. And that's a little more trickier because a lot of the identities aren't maybe not in the system. I know like the early 2000s, I think there was a VICE program where they tried to just track the folks on the streets, and a few of the officers that we spoke to said that was difficult. So it's really sticky. And I know there's organizations like CSE out there that do help a lot of people exit, and they'll come in from kind of a ground in approach, and they'll hand out gift certificates and food and just say, hey, when you're ready to exit or you need support, we're here for you. So there is organizations like that. And then there's also an organization called Answers. And I can't really speak to what they're doing because they declined to be interviewed. So I know they're helping the folks in the industry who want to stay in the industry. So I think that's also important too. We have to recognize that there's women out here and you know, just folks in general that say, hey, I want to do this. My body, my choice, sex work is work. So we have to respect those opinions as well. So as you can see by my long answer there, very, very tricky situation to navigate.
Absolutely. I mean, I've had conversations about addiction and drugs, and it's a similar conversation. It's not a simple one size fits all space. Do you know what I mean? There's different solutions for different people or different things that work for different people. So I can understand where you come from here saying that there's just not a simple answer. When you're working with such a sensitive subject, it's really hard to get individuals to open up considering the level of trauma they may have likely faced around the sex trade and maybe the judgment they might face. How did you get individuals like these three women to open up about their experiences? I know you talked a little bit or alluded a bit to it, but it takes a lot to earn the trust of these individuals, especially with such a sensitive topic.
Absolutely. And I think that was 100%, especially with the women who have exited or the folks who are kind of working on the outside of everything. It was all Andrea. Andrea had the trust within, just with her work that she's doing within the community. So that was all Andrea. They trusted Andrea and he said, hey, these are good guys. They're going to do the interview, conduct everything on that part. But like, I'll be here in the room with you. If you need time to breathe, get some water, relax, you have that time. If you need additional supports, we were providing that as well. So we were trying to make as safe as a space as possible. And I think that definitely helped. But it was also a small crew. So it was for the majority, it was like three or four of us, which I think also helps. You don't have this full film crew of, 20, 30 people who are just all staring at you in your most vulnerable moments. So I think that helped as well. And then with the people still in the industry, that was a little more tricky because they straight up dislike Andrea. They do not like Andrea at all because she is against the industry. So to gain those folks' trust, that was a little more difficult. And it was just kind of landing one interview, did that. And she was like, oh, okay, this isn't bad. Like, I thought you guys were going to come at me and really like push me in a certain direction because I know you're working with Andrea, but that wasn't it at all. And that was what I wanted to relay too, is like, as much as Andrea's story is a big part of it and her opinion is this opinion, but I want to capture everything. I don't just want her opinion. No one wants to watch a biased documentary, right? It needs to be more fleshed out. So I think that once that one interview was done, it opened up the doors. And like having a former counselor, Scott McKeenan, who a lot of the folks in the industry trusted to begin with, they were like, yeah, if you got him, like, I feel good about talking. I think it was just, yeah, word of mouth and just showing that, hey, I want to hear what you have to say. I'm here to listen. I'm here to learn.
You do a good job of really highlighting some of the aspects of why generational trauma exists and how that affects racism. I actually found it quite shocking by simply identifying as Indigenous increased women's risk tenfold. It's wild that their humanity is simply ignored because they identify as Indigenous. How did you navigate that or feel about that in that situation?
That was one of the most shocking things that kind of first discovered. And that initially hearing that was actually from one of the Andrea interviews before, where she said a lot of Indigenous women in the industry, they'll identify as being Thai or Brazilian or Spanish. And that just kind of blew my mind and opened up the door to kind of asking Juanita and April Eve, especially, who kind of discusses it because she had the firsthand experience of she had to identify herself in New York as going out as Spanish and quote unquote exotic ethnicities. And that was just like shocking that there was this level of racism embedded in the sex industry, which opened my eyes to this is just deeper than sex work. You're getting racism and colonialism and everything there. It's all piling on. It's just really sad and frustrating.
In the documentary here for this one specifically, they talk a little bit about the calls to action. How much work has been done from a perspective of governance? You had the chief of police here in Edmonton speak. He says the solutions are there, but are they taking action to actually take the steps that he's referring to? I don't feel like he was maybe necessarily challenged enough. Like, where do you feel the police are moving in terms of the direction and taking action and those calls to action around missing and murdered Indigenous women?
Yeah, that's a great question. And one that I don't have a full answer for, but from what I do know, we filmed the interview with the police chief in, I believe it was 2021. And since then, there's been a bit of work within the province through an organization called Alert. And there's been a task force set up more along the lines of human trafficking with a specific focus on missing and murdered Indigenous women. So there is steps there that are being taken, and what those look like, I'm not entirely sure. You know, that scope is kind of beyond where the documentary was.
That's fair.
And then from there, I don't actually know what's going on within the police or within the system here in Edmonton. If I'm looking at it, I'm not seeing anything. I assume very little is being done, which is unfortunate. But yeah, I'd like to see more being done. I just, don't know what that looks like.
Absolutely. And that's why these conversations are so important, right? We want to push for change. I think there was probably some motivation from yourself to spur on change. You're listening to Moving Radio on CJSR 88.5. I'm speaking with Justin Kieber, the director, writer, and producer of the docuseries Labeled. Specifically, we're talking about the Missing, Murdered, and Forgotten episode. You have three opportunities to see different artists, including Justin. His will be out at the Capitol Theater in Fort Edmonton Park on March 15th at 7 o'clock in the evening as part of the 40th anniversary of the Film and Arts Society, or FAVA. We're going to kind of change gears here a bit. Being featured as a part of this 40th anniversary of FAVA is pretty special. Could you explain your connection to the Film and Arts Society and maybe how you felt it helped you as an artist?
Yeah, FAB was amazing. I initially started, it was maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and it was for a short film production of mine. I wanted to join because if you're a FAB member, you get amazing rates on equipment. So that was the reason why I joined. And I'm glad I did because it's so much more than just amazing equipment rentals. Super supportive group there. They're always, you know, holding amazing workshops. So screenwriting, directing, acting, like you name it. If you want to like just learn something that's out of your comfort zone, they have it available to you. And that's super cool. They have great spaces at the Orange Hub. Actually, a lot of Labeled was shot at their studio space in the Orange Hub. So just, yeah, great spaces, great people. And they have, you know, fantastic events like FavaFest where you can go and see other members' films, and there's a great gala, and you know, it's a really fun event and a great networking event as well.
Why do you think the Film and Video Arts Society is so vital to the Edmonton arts community itself?
I think there's just a really special level of support. They have a lot of folks who are, you know, experts in certain areas of expertise, and they go above and beyond to help artists, especially here in Alberta. It's tough when you have all these big productions going on in Calgary, and it seems like there isn't really a place to get your foot in the door. They help you out with that. They have the connections, and you just feel like they care. If you want to send an email, if you have a question, they're quick to reply. I think they're for the artist. It's special having an organization like FAVA.
Speaking to your passion around storytelling, what was the moment for you when you knew that you were going to be a filmmaker? And why is storytelling so important to you?
Yeah, I think the moment I knew I was going to be a filmmaker was I had like an old TV cam back in the day. Like this is probably maybe early 2000s, and just shooting like stupid movies with friends. I'm like, there's something more to this. There's something deeper. You know, they might be stupid now, but we're having fun doing it, and we're getting to tell these stories now that looking in retrospect, they're silly, but they were special at the time, and it formed a place for the passion to grow. So I think that was kind of the starting point for me. And then just it continued there, and getting to tell stories, and whether that's from a documentary lens where you're telling other people's stories or telling your own that you've written, it's, I don't know, it feels like you're getting something out into the world and something that could have impact to change or impact to make people laugh or cry and just have emotions. It's, I don't know, it's a special feeling.
When people come out to see your docuseries here at the FavaFest for their 40th anniversary, what do you hope that they'll come out of the screening with, or how do you hope that they'll respond to your docuseries?
Yeah, it's always difficult watching the screenings, and I kind of like watching, I've seen the film so many times, I kind of like watching other people's reactions, and there's a lot of different reactions. There's a lot of shock, there's a lot of emotion, a lot of tears. It brings out, yeah, kind of an array of emotions. So I hope when people watch it, they get something out of it, whether that, you know, invokes them to maybe pursue finding ways to help change, or maybe just within themselves, you know, doing something and changing their ways. That means a lot to us as a filmmaker. We just hope it kind of invokes something in you, and maybe, you know, you learn a thing or two along the way, because we definitely did in our 4 years of this label journey.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to kind of seeing more of your journey. You know, having just seen this episode, you know, it certainly sparks something. There's a lot to unpack in even this episode. So thank you for that. It's been great to have you join us here, Justin.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great chatting with you.
You can see Justin Kieber's documentary series, episode Labeled Missing, Murdered, and Forgotten as part of the 40th anniversary of FAVA, or the Film and Arts Society Alberta at Capitol Theatre out in Fort Edmonton Park. That's on March 15th. The screening featuring other artists on March 8th out at the Orange Hub, as well as the Metro Cinema on March 22nd. All those screenings at 7 o'clock in the evening on a Friday. So a perfect time to get out and check it out, especially, you know, to hit up the weekend and see some great talented artists from right here in your hometown of Edmonton, Alberta. It is Moving Radio. I'm Lucas Anders, your correspondent on CJSR 88.5, the farthest left on the dial.
The month that she was missing was probably the hardest month of my life. I don't know where she is. She's disappeared.
You are more likely to become missing or murdered if you are Indigenous.
Nobody would even have known I was gone.